On the night of April 20th, 1944, nine Luftwaffe Ju-88 Junkers fighter bombers attacked a U.S. convoy sailing in the Mediterranean Sea. At approximately 9:03 p.m., one of the Junkers dropped a torpedo on the converted troop transport ship, the SS Paul Hamilton. The torpedo pierced the hull and detonated in a cargo hold below deck, igniting munitions that were being ferried to Italy. The detonation caused a massive explosion, instantly killing all 580 souls aboard. 20 officers and 297 enlisted men from the U.S. Army Air Force's 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron perished in the blast. 317 of the squadron's 342 members were killed in that moment. The remaining 25 members of the unit survived because they were aboard another ship in the convoy. On May 18, 1944, less than 30 days after that horrific event, the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron flew their first combat mission over Europe. Today I'm going to tell you about the little-known story of the tragedy, resilience, and eventually triumph of the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron. This is the Air Minded Podcast. Welcome back, Air Minded listeners, and thanks for tuning in again after a little bit of a hiatus. This is your host, the Air Minded Gorilla, Tyson Wetzel. I got a little bit of a different episode for you today, a little bit shorter than typical and no interview. It's just me telling you about an air power history story that means a lot to me. I mentioned in the prologue that there'll be an occasional episode where it's just going to be me talking, and that's what today's episode is, but I really hope that you enjoyed it. You know, I mentioned previously that I'm the commander of an Air Force squadron, and I haven't told you, but it's a 32nd Intelligence Squadron. One of the first things I did when I learned that I was getting this particular squadron is I looked up the history of the unit. And as I dove into the history, I was thrilled to see that the squadron's lineage dates all the way back to World War II, distinguished service in the European theater as the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron. The squadron flew a reconnaissance variant of the venerable P-38 Lightning, which itself an awesome aircraft, a really cool mission. And as I dove into some of the combat history, there's a lot there. The squadron was distinguished multiple times. They flew over 1,000 combat sorties during the last year of the European theater conflict. And because of that, the squadron is allowed to hang a European theater campaign streamer from the squadron guidon, we call it, or flag, which is pretty cool. I think any time that your unit can claim a piece of defeating the Nazis and helping to win victory in Europe, that's pretty cool. But as I read about the history, there was something else that immediately jumped out at me in addition to the combat successes of the squadron, and that's the terrible tragedy that I talked about at the beginning of this episode. It's now 77 years ago that the squadron lost nearly 95% of the of its personnel. And as I read just a little bit about it in kind of the online history of the squadron, I needed to know more. I wanted to find any source that I could to learn a little bit more about this episode. So I reached out to the Air Force Historical Research Agency. I reached out to the wing historian. I relied on everybody's best friend, Google. I devoured everything I could find about this event. I knew it was a story that would really be profound for our unit, and it's a story that I wanted to be told. So each year on the 20th of April, I make our squadron dress up in their blues, the blues uniform, which doesn't make me the most popular guy on April 20th because most of our military members don't like dressing up in that particular uniform. And we host a memorial event. Actually, it's a couple of events throughout the day. Unfortunately, because of COVID, the last couple of years, we've had to do this virtually on Zoom. And the squadron has to hear me talk about this tragic day. But I also like to think of it as more than just a tough or tragic day. I also like to talk about the resilience of those 25 survivors, and we'll get into it a little bit more as we get into kind of the history of what happened with the squadron. But those 25 members who survived that attack, they eventually rebuilt the squadron. They were the heart and soul of this unit that flew 1,060 combat missions over the Mediterranean, the Balkans, France, Germany, even the Baltics on shuttle photo reconnaissance missions. So there is more than just the tragedy. It's also the resiliency of the unit. And I see it as actually a success story. And one reason why I wanted to talk to you about it is that I think it is important to look at some of the stories that maybe are not told that often. In war, I really think sometimes we lose perspective of loss and tragedy. In World War II, more than 405,000 Americans lost their lives. That's just an astounding number, and it is tough for us to think of that as anything more than a statistic. That number just lacks real impact unless you know some of the personal stories of those that were lost. Some of you may have personal stories, a family member that was lost in war, but for me, I don't have that. I'm the first member of my family to join the military. So I just know these wars through movies and TV shows and reading about them. And when I read about this story, it made that conflict seem a little bit more, I guess, I was more able to understand some of the scope or of the tragedy, I guess, is the best way that I can say it. And what I think about is that each one of those more than 400,000 individuals that died while serving their country was somebody's son or daughter. They were a father or mother, a husband or wife, brother or sister, friend, loved one, you name it. Each one of those that was lost was mourned deeply by their family, their friends, those that they served with. And I hope that by telling the story of the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron, you'll not only learn a little bit about a story that you probably haven't heard before, but also it'll hopefully help remind you of the size and the scope and scale of that unbelievable war, and what the tragedy of even one of our nation's finest that give that last, as Lincoln called it, that last full measure of devotion, the ultimate sacrifice to their country. So with that said, let me get into it and talk about the history of the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron. All right, with that fairly lengthy intro over, let's go ahead and get into the history of the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron. So the history of the squadron dates back to 11 August of 1943. That's when the then 45th Reconnaissance Squadron fighter was redesignated the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron. Now, the squadron trained on a couple of different aircraft, but eventually it was outfitted with the Lockheed F-5. That is a photographic reconnaissance variant of the P-38 Lightning. The squadron had a couple of different homes, finally ending up at Will Rogers Field in Oklahoma City at the beginning of 1944. And they spent their spin-ups for war there at Will Rogers Field and eventually moved to the Eastern Seaboard. And we pick up the story at the end of March as the squadron was at Camp Patrick Henry in Hampton Roads, Virginia. And it was from there where the squadron embarked on troop transport ships. And on the 1st of April and eventually on the 3rd of April, they got going. But fatefully, the squadron was split on two different ships. 25 officers of the ground crew boarded the converted troop ship, the SS Fitzhugh Lee, while the other 317 members of the squadron boarded the SS Paul Hamilton. The ships left, like I said, Hampton Roads on April 3rd, and they joined a slow convoy headed for Gibraltar and eventually the Mediterranean Sea. The trip across the Atlantic was fairly uneventful. And for those of you who've seen Tom Hanks's excellent Greyhound on Apple TV Plus, that brilliantly played out how dangerous a convoy across the Atlantic can be, you know that that was by no means a guarantee that the convoy would make it safely across the Atlantic. The convoy reached the Mediterranean on April 18th of 1944, and that's where our story takes a tragic turn. At about 6 p.m. on the evening of April 20th, as the convoy was about 60 miles east of Algiers, lookouts on the ship spotted probable enemy fighters. About 3 hours later, just after the sunset, those enemy fighters returned, and they came back to attack the convoy. The aircraft were German Air Force or Luftwaffe Ju-88 Junkers and HE-111 Heinkel fighter bombers. At about 9:03 p.m., the first wave of Junkers attacked the convoy. It's believed 9 of these aircraft dropped torpedoes on the Paul Hamilton. One of these torpedoes pierced the deck and detonated in a cargo hold that was inexplicably filled with munitions destined for Allied use in Italy. And the reason why I say it was inexplicably filled with munitions is not that it is out of the ordinary that high explosive munitions were being ferried to a combat zone in North Africa, Sicily, and eventually Italy. What was inexplicable is that those munitions were on a troop ship, which allowed a tragedy of this magnitude to occur. So the resulting explosion was absolutely massive, as the torpedo detonation caused secondary explosions, and there was a massive fireball. There's actually a picture that was taken of the fireball, of the impact, just moments after that initial explosion, and I will post it with the podcast notes and on my social media accounts, but it's an incredibly powerful image, as you see the ship just being blown apart by this torpedo and the resulting secondary explosions. In that instant, all 580 souls aboard the Paul Hamilton were extinguished. And rather gruesomely, the remains of only one soldier was ever recovered, and that individual's arm was blasted to another ship in the convoy. The remains of the ship sunk in about 45 seconds, and of course there were no survivors. Of those 580 aboard, 20 officers and 297 enlisted men from the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron perished. And sadly, the squadron's 25 survivors on the Fitzhugh Lee had to watch the entire tragedy unfold, as they were on the ship directly behind the Paul Hamilton in the convoy, watched the attack unfold, and watched the torpedo attack on the ship, and saw the massive explosion, and knew that virtually the entire squadron had been extinguished in that one attack. Two other ships, a merchant vessel and a U.S. Navy destroyer, the USS Lansdale, were also sunk in the attack, with 47 sailors lost aboard the Lansdale. The convoy finally reached Sicily on April 24th, and after a two-day rest, the Fitzhugh Lee went on to Bari, Italy, where the remaining 25 members of the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron disembarked from the ship and moved to what would eventually be their home for just over a year, San Severo, Italy. The squadron fell under the Mediterranean Allied Air Forces, which was then commanded by Lieutenant General Ira Aker, and the decision by Aker and his staff was made for the 32nd to live on. At the end of the month, the squadron started receiving replacement enlisted men and air crew, and amazingly, just 20 days after arriving in San Severo, on May 18, 1944, the squadron flew its first combat mission. It's amazing to me. Less than 30 days had elapsed from this almost unfathomable tragedy, but the shutterbugs of the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron were reconstituted and they were flying again. And this is one of my favorite parts of the story, is not only the tragedy that happened, and it's easy to just focus on the fact that nearly the entire squadron was killed, but I like to talk about this as a story of resiliency. It's amazing to me that less than 30 days after 95% of the squadron was killed, they're off flying combat operations. And on May 19th, less than a month, they declared themselves fully operationally capable. And that's just amazing. And I think it gets to the resiliency of those 25 individuals that were left. And that's why I like to talk about this story, not only as a way to look at one tragic event, but also to look at the kind of human spirit, the power to overcome these unbelievable events that happen in war, especially in a conflict like World War II that was so devastating that people somehow find just vast amounts of strength and resiliency to continue on. So a little bit more for the towards the mission that they were accomplishing, the 32nd, known as the Shutterbugs. They initially flew the bulk of their sorties over the Balkans, but as the Allies pushed east from France and west from Russia, the operational area of the Shutterbugs changed dramatically. The squadron flew over Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Austria, eventually southern Germany, and into the heart of Germany. There was a desire for more photo reconnaissance on the Eastern Front as well, and so the squadron flew some extremely long shuttle missions from Italy to Ukraine. They would stay there for a day or two and then come back to Italy. Most of these missions throughout all of the theaters were flown without armed fighter escort, and in the late summer and in early fall, four of the squadron pilots were listed as missing in action and presumed to be lost to enemy fire. The squadron, in the nearly year of flying combat operations, eventually flew 1,060 photographic reconnaissance missions over all the theaters that I've already mentioned. They provided critical intelligence on key German targets. They took pictures of bridges and roads and railroads, marshal yards, things that were vital for the Allied forces that were moving towards the German heartland. They also took pictures of troops in the open and on the move, and they provided that information to Allied forces so that those Nazi and Axis forces could be targeted successfully. The squadron received a Distinguished Unit Citation for actions in the Balkan campaign in the fall of 1944. The Nazis needed to move troops out of the Balkans to try and reallocate their resources to the Eastern and Western Front. And as the Nazis were prepping for a large-scale withdrawal, the Shutterbugs were tasked with imaging and developing photographic reconnaissance and intelligence on what the Nazis were doing. And the squadron identified huge numbers of German fighters and transport aircraft at various airfields throughout the Balkans. And with that information passed up to the Mediterranean Allied Air Forces, that vital intelligence played a critical role in targets, these targets being hit by Allied aircraft. And there were devastating airstrikes on Luftwaffe aircraft and airfields, and it significantly hampered the ability of the Nazis to support this orderly withdrawal from the Balkans and to reallocate those forces to where they were desperately needed on both the Western and the Eastern Front. So throughout the rest of the fall and spring, the focus of the Shutterbugs' mission went from preparation of the battlefield to really support for the troops that were on the move and headed towards the heart of Nazi Germany. And the squadron eventually flew its last of its 1,060 combat missions over Salzburg, Austria on May 4th of 1945. And the squadron was able to celebrate very justifiably able to celebrate the capitulation of the Nazis in early May. And they took well-deserved pride in the decisive role that air power played in the last year of the war. And so the squadron didn't shoot down any aircraft. It wasn't until the end that they had even any of the armed variants of the photo reconnaissance P-38. They didn't drop bombs, but they did develop vital intelligence for General Eisenhower, his forces, the rest of the Allied forces that were making their way into Germany and eventually putting pressure on the Nazi regime. And as a huge amount of forces did after the capitulation, the squadron was eventually demobilized in October of 1945, and over that summer, the squadron already started to disassemble and be demobilized, and the squadron was sent home. And the squadron was inactive from 1945 to 1952 when it was reactivated in Europe as the 32nd Tactical Reconnaissance Squadron. And then for about the next 14 years, from 1952 to 1976, the 32nd Tactical Reconnaissance Squadron flew a bunch of different types of aircraft around Europe, primarily the RF-4 Charlie, but in support of NATO missions. And eventually, that mission went away, and the squadron was deactivated again in 1976. The squadron was reactivated in 1993 as the 32nd Intelligence Squadron. Today, the squadron is housed at Fort George G. Meade, Maryland, and is responsible for cryptologic operations in support of national and tactical warfighter requirements. The squadron retains the lineage and the heraldry of the 32nd Photographic Reconnaissance Squadron, and the legacy of that unit, known as the Shutterbugs, lives on today with the Blue Knights, the airmen and guardians of the 32nd Intelligence Squadron. But with that, that is kind of the history in a nutshell of the 32nd. And I really like telling this story, and I will continue to tell this story as we actually get to the 20th of April, to just remind us of the unbelievable tragedy that happens in war, and we can take the story of the 32nd and that horrible event that happened on April 20th of 1944 to try and understand just some of the scope and the scale of loss that happened in World War II. But I think it's also really important to remember what happens after that, and that the squadron is able to reconstitute and to be able to fly combat operations in less than a month after that event is really just astounding. And that's what I like to focus on when I talk to my squadron, and to say that this is what we can take, this is the positive that we can take out of the darkest day in our squadron's history, is that we can look at those 25 survivors and how they were able to not necessarily get over that event, but be able to use that as motivation and to be able to fight hard and reconstitute and eventually continue fighting and flying for the last year of the conflict. And eventually they got to take part in victory over the Nazis. So a pretty cool end to the story, if you will. So I'm obviously really proud of the lineage of my squadron. We are about 420 people right now, and I'd like to think that we try and do pride or try to do the name of the squadron proud by continuing to work hard for national security. So anyways, that's it for this episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. I know it was a little bit different, it was a story that I wanted to tell, and I hope that you enjoyed it. Well, that does it for another episode of the Air-Minded Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That way you'll be the first to know when I drop new episodes. If you're so inclined, I'd be happy if you reviewed us on Apple. A 5-star review is much appreciated. And be sure to keep the feedback and suggestions coming. I've had a bunch of you reaching out via email, social media. I really appreciate it. You can follow me on social media at Air-Minded Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, or you can just email me directly at airmindedpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, I couldn't end an episode without the legalese, so just as a reminder, the views presented on the Air-Minded Podcast are mine alone and do not necessarily represent those of the Department of Defense or the United States Air Force. Thanks again for tuning into the Air-Minded Podcast. I am the Air-Minded Gorilla, Tyson Wetzel, signing off and saying I'll see you next time.